You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
Hi, this is the Naturalist Show with my host, co-host,
Carol Butler,
and I'm Bernie Wides. We're on the air today, and Jack played some water. I think that was Handel's Water Music, because one show we were doing is going to be about the water supply of New York City.
Right.
Okay. So you know, New York's a pretty old city, and when the settlers came here, Manhattan was full of springs and streams, and there was plenty of fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
But as the population grew, they started to, A, use up the water supply, and B, the wells they were drawing water from were shallow wells.
Right, and there was a lot of pollution. I think about the early stories with the horses and all the manure in the streets and how filthy and smelly it was.
Yes, they didn't have a sewer system
in the early days.
So, you know, it was either a privy in the back of the building or with all those animals running around, the crap was all over the streets.
And runoff.
And runoff, it would run off in. So what they had to do was the city dug a public well for the whole community to use. And that worked for a short time also. But as the population grew, we're talking about 1776 now.
Okay,
the population was about 22,000 people.
Oh, perfect. I was going to ask you, but I was afraid. You didn't know.
Yeah, about 22,000. Mm. So they built the first reservoir in the city. It wasn't really a reservoir. It was a big pond.
Mm.
I just mentioned that. It was called the Collect Pond.
Right.
Because they collected water and put it into the pond.
And then people came with a pail and got water from there?
Right. And where did they get the water from? From wells and streams and all that. So the collect pond worked for a while, but after a while that was getting contaminated also.
Mm.
So the city had to do something else. Okay? So what they did was, first of all, they made a distribution system. So you didn't have to go with your bucket. They put water pipes underground. Mm-hmm. And what do you think they were made of, those water pipes?
Lead? I don't know.
They were made from logs.
Logs, okay.
So what they would do is they would bore a hole in the center of a log.
Wow.
And make the logs. Let's see that each log was 6 feet long.
Right.
At one end, they'd put a taper on it. I mean, they would cut a slope. So they could put the logs together by forcing the logs together.
I see, okay.
And once water was flowing through these logs,
They swelled
up.
Right, okay.
You know, like if you had a boat and with the seams, you remember that
sure,
from the whole time.
Sure, yeah.
You had to cork the boat and the stuff
you
would swell up.
You put it in the water, the wood swells and closes up the opening.
So that was a pretty good system for a long time. Okay, but by 1830, also there was a problem with fire in the city. There were insurance companies in those days also that would insure you against fire. And a lot of them had their own fire companies.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no place to get the water for fires. So the city had to build a big water supply just for fires so they can go get water. Because those pumpers that they use that you see in the picture being pulled by the horses and all that, they were pumped by hand.
Right.
So they had to pump the water, but they had to get the water from someplace. So around that time, They put this this water collection basin that was just for fire. So the city was growing very rapidly, so they had to do something. So they decided, since most of the wells in the city were polluted and the water was terrible, first of all, people hardly ever drank water.
Mm.
Okay? They drank a lot of beer and a lot of cider. They would make apple cider, which was hard apple cider.
Right.
It had alcohol in it. So it was fairly safe. I don't
cleaner
know.
Than the water, yeah. Healthier than the water.
Healthier than the water. That's true. So what they did was, by the way, that water tank for fire protection was located right near where you live. It was 13th Street and Broadway.
Oh, my goodness.
Where you're 13th Street?
Yeah, between 5th and 6th.
Yeah. So it was in your neighborhood, which was probably almost the edge of the city in
right,
those days.
Right.
So I just want to let you know, Carol, you're near a historic spot
right,
there.
Right, I am. Okay? There are a lot of historic spots. Right?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so the city decided that they would go out of the city and get water from the surrounding areas. Mm. And they went north of the city into Westchester County, okay? And because they knew that there was a couple of rivers that drained into Long Island Sound and into the Bronx and different places. Mm-hmm. And one river was the Croton River,
right,
which isn't a huge river, but at least it flows all year round.
Right.
So what they did was they built a dam and a reservoir for the water from the Croton River. Okay, so the city bought this land, so they owned it.
Right.
And this was the beginning of the New York City watershed supply.
Right, and of course we still have the Croton Dam and the Croton Reservoir.
Right. So if you travel up to Westchester County, to Croton, you can still see the dam and reservoir. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first reservoir for the city where they brought water from outside the city. Now, how did they get the water down into the city? It was a very ingenious method. You would think that they would need pumps and everything, okay? But just remember in those days, there were no high-rise buildings.
Right.
Everything was small,
right?
Maybe two stories, three stories. So the water was coming from a higher elevation than the city.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember from school, that water seeks its own level.
Yes.
So if you have a water supply that's higher than the city, you don't have to pump the water.
Right, because just gravity feeds.
Gravity.
Yeah.
So they built this Croton Aqueduct. Hmm. An aqueduct is a big pipe that carries water. And what they did was, it was terrific engineering for those days. It was about 50 miles long. I don't remember how long it was to bring the water to the city from Croton. I don't remember what the number was. But they made a little slope in this this aqueduct system.
Mm-hmm.
It lowered its elevation 1 inch every mile.
Hmm.
So the water flowed naturally
right
down from Croton into the city. So where did they put this water when it was coming into the city? Well, here we come to an interesting little story. Okay, if you go to Central Park, there's a place called the Bethesda Terrace.
Right.
Which was sort of a focal point of Central Park. And the city wanted to do something in the park having to do with the new water supply. So first of all, when the park was built, they put a reservoir in the park. Now, you know there's still a reservoir
yes.
in the park.
But I think we don't use it.
We don't use it. It's a storage one. It's for emergencies.
Yes.
But it's still there. It's still operational. There was another reservoir that is where the Great Lawn is.
Mm-hmm.
That was another reservoir. Hmm. Okay, so you had this huge reservoir in the park. And also, there was a reservoir that was built, there were two in Central Park. And the other one, well, I'll have to look it up again, see where it was. But anyhow, if you go to Central Park and you go to Bethesda Terrace, which is this lovely terrace overlooking the lake,
yeah.
There's a plaza, and in the middle of this plaza is a fountain.
Right.
Okay? And the fountain is called Angel of the Waters. Now, why would this fountain be called Angel of the Waters? Because when this woman, her name was Emma Stubbs, by the way, it was very unusual in the 1860s for a woman to get a job, a public sculptor. So she got the job because I think somebody in her family was a commissioner of the parks.
She
had a connection. The things like that go way back. Right,
they sure do.
So she got the commission to build this statue, which is tall, and to put it in the park, and they turned on the fountain. When they turned on the water supply coming from Croton,
right,
that flowed down into the city, and it flowed right to this.
Into that, then you had that spectacular
right
fountain.
So
that's nice. Yeah.
So if you go on the website, on the site, you'll see a picture of the fountain.
Right.
Okay, and also a picture of all the aqueducts that are bringing water into New York City. Okay, Now, I took that picture of the Angel of the Waters. It was raining, mm-hmm. so it looks a little fuzzy, but it's, you know.
No, it looked nice. I saw
water.
It when you sent it.
Yeah. So it's nice. So if anybody says to you, why is there an angel in Central Park? You can tell them that it's called the Bethesda Fountain. And
right.
why is it called Bethesda Fountain? Because there's a reference in the Book of John to an angel that dipped its wing in a fountain in Jerusalem.
Mm.
And that section was called Bethesda.
Right.
Okay? So, and supposedly that water in that fountain had magic curative powers.
Oh, okay. Oh, very nice.
So that's the story of the name of Bethesda. Okay? So she decided to call it Bethesda Fountain. And she built this sculpture. Now, if you look at it very carefully, it's a female sculpture of a female angel. You don't see too many female angels, especially in Central Park. It was going to be the only really sculpture in the whole park when the park was started. But over the years, through political influence and all kinds of stuff, we now have a whole bunch of sculptures all over the park.
Yes, we do.
To commemorate this and this and all that kind of stuff. So this was going to be the focal point of Central Park.
You could do a whole show on the sculptures in Central Park. Would
That's
be
right.
interesting.
Yeah, I don't remember how many there are, but there are quite a few. And if you go to Central Park on a nice day, not when it was raining, when I went, and look at the sculpture. It's a woman, but it doesn't look very feminine. So after she made this sculpture, she was criticized a lot. Because the way it was. And the reason, some of the reasoning why it doesn't look so feminine is that Emma Stubbs was a gay woman.
Ah.
Which was very unusual. And of course, nobody, you know, it was a secret in those days.
I'm surprised it's part of the history. Yeah.
Yes, I found it. It's part of the
history. You have your sources, I know.
So, it's a female, it isn't that feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the story of the fountain in Central Park, which has to do with the New York City water supply. So going forward in time, the city kept growing and growing and growing, and there was a need for more water.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So the Bethesda Fountain was built in 1842.
Okay.
Okay? And we just spoke about the name and the terrace, and by that time, the city was using, 80 million gallons of water. So that was a lot of water. So the city had to do the following. They decided that on the east side of the Hudson River, where Croton is in Westchester County, that there weren't any rivers there that could supply more water than they were getting from the Croton River.
Mm-hmm.
They're all small rivers. The Sawmill River and the Croton River, and there's a couple of others. There's a Bronx River. But they're all not very big. So the city decided that they're going up into the Catskill Mountains, okay?
I'm just thinking of all of those have parkways associated with them.
That's
for
right.
some
the,
reason.
The
I
Sawmill
guess running,
Parkway.
Running alongside the river.
Yeah, so if you drive up the Sawmill now,
you'll
see the Sawmill River.
Right, and the Bronx River Parkway, too.
That's right, because it was flat and, you know, there was access along there to build the highways. So what the city did was they went up to the Catskill Mountains, because they knew that they needed a water supply from someplace that in elevation that was higher than the city.
Yeah.
And since the city is practically at sea level, and Croton is probably an elevation maybe 100 or 200 feet, but they were going to bring water from a bigger distance. It's about 150 miles to the Catskill Mountains from the city. So what they did was they started to buy land in the Catskill Mountains. And they bought land that was around ponds and streams and things like that. And land that they couldn't buy, they made agreements with the farmers that the city would help them to divert runoff from the farm so it wouldn't end up in the water supply. So that was a great idea. So what the city did was access or buy all this territory.
Mm-hmm.
There's 1,600 miles of a watershed in the Catskill Mountains.
And did they run an aqueduct? An aqueduct along that watershed?
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you look at my pictures, there's a map there showing It says the New York City water supply. And if you look at it carefully, there are three aqueducts, which are these huge water pipes. And when I mean huge, you could walk through them. Mm-hmm. They're probably maybe 10 feet in diameter, easily. And they built them out of masonry and stone.
And they were above ground or
no,
buried?
No, underground.
Okay. All,
yeah, when you think of aqueducts, like the Roman aqueducts, they were up above the ground. But these aqueducts were all put underground, except where they had to cross the rivers.
Right.
So there's still an aqueduct that crosses the East River. If you drive from Manhattan up to the Bronx, I don't know.
I used to live on Aqueduct Avenue in the
okay.
Bronx. So that's
so
where the
that's
aqueduct
right.
went. Yeah.
Okay, so there's still an aqueduct that crosses the river. Up there, it may be called the Bronx River, but it's part of the East River, which joins the Hudson.
But aqueduct. It's interesting because it's a funny piece of land. It's right across, you know where NYU was. Now it's Bronx Community College.
Yeah.
University
Avenue, is it?
It's a university in the village. It's but it's university,
whatever.
I guess, Avenue in the Bronx.
Yeah.
But right across from there is Aqueduct Avenue, and it's
a strange
little street.
Yeah. So that's where the name came from. So, Jack, how much time we have for the first part? So I'll know. 2 minutes? Okay. So I said that the city was bought all this land in the Catskills, and they started to develop the water supply for the city. Now the city uses 1.4 billion gallons of water a day.
Wow.
That's a lot of water. And the way they measure water, out west, the farmers, they measure because they have to buy water and stuff. They measure water by, it's called water foot. Or square feet of surface water.
Oh.
It's called something like water. I don't remember the term, but I learned that way back in school. Okay, so if we look at that map, and you'll see the green area, which is Catskill Park, and to the right of the Hudson, you can see the green area there where the Croton waterworks are.
Mm-hmm.
So what the situation we have now is that 10% of our water comes from east of the Hudson, from the Croton system, and 90% of the water that we drink comes from the Catskill Mountains and the Delaware River.
Okay.
The headwaters of the Delaware River. Okay? So we had a little fight with the state of New Jersey many years ago because they didn't want us to take any water from the Delaware River. But it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said the city has right to blah, 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 all that stuff. So we have this terrific water supply.
And we have such delicious water in New York.
We do. So in the next half of the show, I'm going to talk about, do we drink this water right from the reservoir?
Right.
And the answer, what's the answer? Do we
what
drink
makes it?
It
so delicious?
Yes. So what we have to do is do something to the water.
All right. That's a cliffhanger. Let's leave it there until the second half.
So we'll be back in a minute and talk about the next step in the water supply.
Great.
Jesus gave me water, and it was not in well. Well, there was a woman from Samaria came to the well to get some water. There she met a stranger who did a story tell. That a woman dropped a pitcher, she drank and was made richer from the water he gave her, and it was not in the well. Yes, gave her water. Jesus gave her water. Jesus gave her water. I wanna let his praises swell. Jesus gave her water. He gave that woman water. Gave a living, loving, lasting water, and it was not in well. On that woman he had pity. She ran back to the city, crying glory, hallelujah.
Hi, folks. We're back on the air. Carol and myself, and the second half of the show, we're going to continue this fascinating story about the New York City water supply. Remember that New York City water supply is rated one of the best in the world. Okay, and I'm going to tell you the reasons. First of all, it's all rainwater.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where we get our water supply from.
Okay.
So in the Catskill Mountains are a huge
watershed.
It's like a big collection
basin.
It's called a watershed because it most of the drainage drains right. south from the mountains.
Right, right.
And the Catskill Mountains are roughly 3,000 feet high. Okay, I think the highest one in Catskill is about 3,000 mm-hmm. feet. So we have this great system of bringing water by gravity down into the city, just like the early city fathers mm-hmm. did for Croton.
Right.
Remember I said they had this pitch, which means the angle of the pipe, it dropped in elevation 1 inch a mile.
Yes.
Okay? Now, from the Catskills, I don't know what the pitch is, but it's probably a little more than an inch a mile because it has to go a long distance. So you can do an experiment at home. If you have a can full of water, right, and it runs out of a spout, the water will come out with a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. right? And if you put it in a little tube, it will shoot up into the air because, as I said, the water seeks its own level. So if the water is from a very high place and you put it in a little narrow pipe, it will go up. It won't go up 3,000 feet, but
right,
it will have a water pressure.
That's interesting. Okay.
Okay. So let's get back to the story of the water supply. Okay, as I said, now the city uses 1.4 billion gallons of water a day. That's a lot of water. So when the city bought land in the Catskills, as I said, they couldn't buy all the land because people didn't want to sell. So they made agreements with the landowners that the city would help them take care of the land. And here's what the city owns. The Catskill system has the Ashokan Reservoir and a few other reservoirs. And if you ever go up Route 22, up through the Catskills, like if you're going skiing up to Hunter Mountain, those places, mm-hmm. you see the huge reservoirs that the city owns. Okay? And then there's water from the Delaware. And they're all connected, all three. The Croton is connected, and the Catskill, and the Delaware supply. So in case one year there isn't enough rain in one area, we can get the water from the other area. So the city very rarely runs out of water. There are some summers that are dry. We get warnings, don't use so much water, but I don't think we've ever run out of water. So there are 19 reservoirs, and there are numerous lakes that we use. And the system is flexible. Of course, I said it's all interconnected. And 95% of the water that comes down is gravity-fed.
Okay, interesting.
Only 5% of it has to be pumped.
Pumped, yeah.
But with 12 buildings in the city, a lot of times the water has to be pumped up to the roof, and then it's fed through the rest of the building.
Right. You're making me think of if you travel around the country, you see all these water tanks in the small towns that I guess the water is pumped really high to the storage tank.
Right. That's
and
right.
And that provides the gravity feed to the local community.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
We don't have any of those in
no.
the city. The water tanks on the roof, of the buildings,
right.
That's, I think, for emergency, for fires, it might be. Because there's a separate standpipe system in tall buildings where the water, I think, is just for fires.
Okay.
And they have the fitting to get the water. It's on the face of the building or standing in front of it.
Right.
It looks like a hydrant.
Yes,
but it's connected
yes.
to the buildings.
Right. But all the buildings have these wooden water tanks on the roof.
Yes.
You think that's for fire? That's interesting.
I think it is. I don't know if that's where the water supply comes from. I'll have to check that out and let you know in the future. If anybody knows that, definitely give us a call and let us know or give us a comment about that. Okay. So we covered the gravity feed, which was an ingenious method. And now we have this huge water supply. Now, how do we make it safe for the residents of the city, okay? Many, many years ago, water was safe to drink right in mountain streams. When I was a kid and we used to go camping, and we used to go up to the Catskills, you could drink the water right from the mountain stream or the spring. Today, you can't do that because there are too many people living up there.
Right.
Especially in Westchester County. Westchester County is a very crowded suburb.
Very populous,
okay?
Yeah.
So what's happening now is the following. Most of our water supply, which comes from the Catskills and the Delaware, is not filtered. It's treated, but it isn't filtered because the water is still excellent water.
Mm-hmm.
But the water east of the Hudson River from Westchester County, from the Croton Aqueduct, they're building a filtration plant in Van Cortlandt Park.
Mm.
Okay? And supposedly they're going to put it underground and have a golf course on top of it.
Oh.
So that's the plan. Of course, there was a lot of opposition of putting it in the park.
Right.
Because the park is for people.
Right.
But, you know, I think it was a political thing, but we won't go into the politics of it because that was a big battle. But so what do we have to put in the water to make it safe? Okay, the first thing we have to put in the water is chlorine. Okay? And chlorine will kill germs. It will kill bacteria and viruses and any other critters that are in the water. Mm. And if you remember years ago, there was a little thing that was in the papers about Orthodox Jewish community. They weren't going to drink the water anymore from the city water because there were copepods in the water. Now, copepods are microscopic. They look like shrimp.
Right.
Okay? So they're technically shellfish,
right?
Even though they're microscopic.
So they're not kosher.
So they're not kosher. So Orthodox Jews can't drink the water from the city. But I don't think that's universal to Orthodox Jews because I have a lot of cousins who are Orthodox, mm-hmm. and they drink the water.
Right.
It's just the Hasidim folks who are very, very Orthodox, right. they decided they're not going to drink the water. But I'm telling you folks right now that even if there were no copepods in the water, there are other microscopic stuff called... there's algae in the water.
Right.
Okay. There's phytoplankton, which are little plants, but these plants have shells.
Mm.
It's called a test, which is like a shell.
A protective shell, but protective it's still kosher. Shell.
Well, that's debatable. How far down you want to go on the microscopic level, right? Okay. So that gets very evolved. I'm not going to go into that, but I remember reading in the paper that this community, I think they were in Brooklyn, and they told their members to only drink bottled water. Now, who knows what was in the bottled water?
I was thinking the same thing, right? You don't know what's in the bottled water.
Sometimes when you buy bottled water, it comes from a municipal water supply.
Absolutely.
And then they put it in bottles, and it's bottled water.
Right.
So it's probably worse than the city water. Okay, so the city puts chlorine
in the... Might have pork in it.
Might have pork tails. Okay, we shouldn't make fun because, you know, people are serious about their religion. But it's just an interesting thing. So what do we do to the water? Now, first of all, we have testing labs near all the major reservoirs upstate. So when the water is drawn out of the reservoir and before it goes into the pipes to come down to the city, it's tested.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it tested for? It's tested for microorganisms. It's tested for chemicals, and it's tested for sediment in the water,
mm-hmm.
okay? And what they do is they treat the water supply before it comes to the city. And by the time the water supply gets down to the city, it's already, of course, good to drink because there are 1 million people north of the city in Westchester County that use that same water supply.
Mm-hmm.
So we have enough water for... about 10 million people. What does the city have now? 7 or 8 million? I don't remember.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So it's treated right at the beginning of the process.
Right.
Yeah.
It's treated at the beginning of the process. But it's tested constantly. Okay? And I'm going to tell you now how the water is tested. Once it gets to the city.
Mm-hmm. Now, you visited a plant where it was tested?
Yep. I visited the DEP's water quality testing station in Queens.
Okay.
Okay? Now, how did I get there? I mean, besides...
On the subway.
On the
probably.
Subway. Well, you can go visit this facility also, but mm-hmm. you have to make a reservation and way in advance. And they don't like too many people to come, so they limit it. But I happen to have a friend, Ed Freud, who's slightly related to the famous
Sigmund?
Freud. Sigmund. So Ed's daughter is the chief... engineer or chemist, or I don't know her official title, of this facility.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
So you had an in.
I had an in, just like Emma Stubbs.
Right.
So I went with Edgar and the two other people. We went to visit this facility. It's in Queens, and it's a beautiful lab. Mm. It's really terrific. So what do they do? All right. We spoke about what happens upstate, and it's... I'll read this from my notes here. What they do is, where did they get the water samples to test in the lab? Okay, remember, the water's flowing through all the pipes of the city now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There are 900 and 65 water testing stations in the city.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if folks have ever noticed it. If you remember the old fire alarm boxes in the city, you know, they were red and they were on a platform and there. Well, these testing stations for the water supply, they're about 4 feet off the ground, also on a column made of iron, and they're about a foot square.
Hmm.
And it says on the front, water testing station.
Wow.
Probably
I'm sure
most
I've walked
people,
past them and never noticed
most
it.
Most people have never noticed it.
Do we have a picture of one?
No, I couldn't get a picture of
it.
But as I said, there are 965 of these stations all around the city.
Hmm.
Okay, so what happens is every day there are people who work for the it's the DEP, I always get mixed up with the DEC, but it's the DEP, the Department of Environmental
Protection. Right.
Yeah. So they go to these testing sites, okay? They take a sample of the water. They go with a plastic bottle that's sterilized, and they put the sample of the water in the bottle, okay? And they do some preliminary testing right on the site. And if they have water that they're not quite sure about, they take it back to the lab. And if you folks look at the picture I put up, you'll see the assistant director of the lab, who is a terrific guy. His name is Ian Hurley. He's a PhD in chemistry, I think. He's looking at the water bottles, and you see big coolers behind him. So these people who work for the DEP collect the water in these sterilized bottles, and they bring them to the lab. Okay? So every day, in one part of the city, the water is being tested.
Mm.
All right? So we have pretty good protection.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I like to see one of these stations now.
Yeah. Okay. So
I have to find out where they are.
Yeah. So the lab is broken down into two sections. One is the biological testing, and the other part is the physical or chemical testing. Okay. And we visited both parts of it. And this Dr. Hurley gave us a terrific tour. Because the young lady who I said is Ed's daughter, of course, she's the chief of the station, so she was kind of busy. So he gave us this great tour. It was excellent. 2.5 hours he spent with us.
Interesting.
Very unusual. That's because Ed was along on the tour.
Right. Got the VIP tour.
We got the VIP treatment. Okay, so what are they're testing for? Bacteria, viruses, and the chlorine levels are tested constantly. They check for pH. Remember pH?
Yes. Acid and base.
Acid and base. That has to be balanced also. Okay. And inorganic and organic pollutants. And turbidity. Turbidity is the clarity of the water.
Right.
Okay. If there's too much sediment in the water, and you can't see through the water. It looks cloudy. So they check for turbidity, odor, and other indicators of pure water. And if you look at the pictures, you'll see a man with test tubes in front of him, a whole line of test tubes. What he's doing, he's checking the color of the water and the odor of the water in the lab.
Hmm.
And turbidity is the clearness or cloudiness of the water.
Right.
You know, when I used to work on this boat doing marine biology, we would do turbidity testing of the water to see how clear the water was, how far down you could see.
Mm.
So you know if you're on Long Island Sound,
you can't see very far.
Can't see very far down. That's because there's so much organic stuff in the water.
Yeah.
You know, plankton, phytoplankton, zooplankton, other critters and algaes and other stuff that makes the water cloudy. Okay? If you go to the Caribbean,
right, of course you can see all
the water's crystal clear.
Yeah.
And you could see a reef 20 feet below.
Sure.
But in the waters of the North Atlantic, you can't do that.
I think you can see about a foot in Long Island Sound.
Yes,
I remember it was always very frustrating.
Yes, you can't see down. But that means that even though the water isn't clear, the water has all these microorganisms in it that are needed in the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, so as I said, if you look at the pictures, you'll see what the lab does.
I don't know how much time we have.
Carlos, how much time do we have? 1 minute?
1 minute.
Okay.
So I have a question.
Okay.
What happens if a sample comes up and it's shockingly dirty, inappropriate?
Okay, so then they have to put out an alert.
Okay.
To the city administration, and they they check the water, and if it's not suitable for drinking, they'll cut off that supply.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they'll trace it all the way back to where it was coming from.
Okay.
Because these are, they can shut off the water from the Croton, they can shut off the water from the Catskill, and they can shut off the water from the Delaware.
Okay, so okay? They switch the source if this necessary.
They switch the sources, right.
I wonder how often that happens.
I asked him about water emergencies. He says he's been working there 25 years, and they never had one where they had to shut the water supply
That's
off.
Good, okay.
So, which is good. So, folks, New York City water is still one of the best, and I can't see buying bottled water, especially Fiji water, which
right.
comes from the Fiji Islands in the Pacific.
Right.
You know what it costs to bring it here in fuel? And it's ridiculous.
It is, right.
So drink New York City water, and it's still the best supply.
I agree.
Even though, if you have water coming into your house, and you have old pipes in your house with lead joints mm-hmm. in the pipes, the city puts a chemical in the water that prevents the lead from leaching into the water.
That's a good thing to talk about, right? You can call 311
yes. and if
you're not happy with the
yeah.
water quality in your building.
If you have a water quality in your building, the water smells funny or it looks funny or it tastes funny, or you're just nervous about it, you can call 311 and ask for the DEP, and they will send you a kit to take a sample of your water. They'll use these same sterilized bottles that they use in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
You put the water in that bottle, you close it up, and you could send it to them, and they will give you a whole readout on the water in your building.
That's good to know.
Especially good for old buildings.
Yes, yes.
Which may have, you know, leaking pipes.
And you were telling me that if they find that there's lead, they can give you something that they'll put in the pipes in the building, which will bind the, will coat the surface of the inside of the pipe.
That stuff is in the water supply.
Oh, it's already in
there. It's already in.
Oh, I see.
It's in the water with the chlorine and stuff. Okay.
Very good.
And these days, with fluoridation, we have fluoride in the water.
We have fluoride, too, yeah.
Which flows through the water.
Right.
So even though it has these things in it, if you're a real purist, you're going to have to buy distilled water, which tastes terrible. And it's expensive.
Right.
So remember, our water is terrific. Now, what's the threat to our water supply? We don't have much time left. I'm just going to mention fracking. Mm-hmm. Remember we did
yes,
a show
yes.
on fracking?
It's in the newspapers.
Fracking is this drilling for natural gas.
Right. They're trying to pass doing it in New York.
They want to do it in the Catskills.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do it in our watershed, that means the water that drains into the lakes and streams that we use for the reservoir, the chemicals in fracking could get into the water.
That's the concern,
And that's the concern. Okay? So if they're going to do fracking, we have to have very stringent regulations that it's nowhere near the water supply. That they do it somewhere else where the water drains away from the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you picture mountains.
Yes, yes.
The water drains down all around the mountains. So if you do it way over on a different place and the water drains down to that area, if nobody's using that water for a water supply, then I can see them doing fracking.
Right.
I mean, everybody, a lot of people want fracking because it's going to bring a lot of money into the state.
Right.
But we have to be really, really careful because some small towns are ready. They can't drink their water.
Mm.
And there's a picture on the web of some guy opening the faucet in his house and lighting a match to it, and the water burst into flame.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because this chemical is like benzene.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And it will burn. So you know, we don't want anything like that to happen to our great water supply in New York City.
Wow.
Okay?
Interesting stuff.
So
interesting.
You can be comfortable drinking our water, and if you have any questions about the water supply or anything having to do with water, just dial 311 and ask them to connect you to the DEP, and they will give you the answers.
And it sounds like it might be nice to take one of those tours of
take
the
one of those
water
tours,
processing
right.
if you're really interested.
If you get together like two or three people and tell them you'd like a tour of the lab,
right.
you can do it, and you find it very informative.
Interesting.
And you can get as technical as you want because this Dr. Hurley was great.
Very good.
And he answered all our questions, and he showed us all the sophisticated stuff they have. They even have petri dishes. Remember from
to
raise bacteria? They have a room with petri dishes where they take a water sample and they put some water on it to see if there's bacteria that will grow.
Very good.
You know, like Giardia, mm-hmm. which is in a lot of water supplies. So that's what they're testing for all the time, besides other contaminants.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biological side of the lab. And the chemical side of the lab, they're testing for metals in the water and other things. So you can be pretty confident that the water supply is okay in New York City.
Okay. I have two bottles of New York City water in my refrigerator at this moment. That's what I drink.
Yeah. So, Carlos, so are we almost over? Yes, just good timing.
Very good.
Okay, thanks for tuning in, folks.
And that was very interesting. Thank you, Bernie.
And our next show will be Carol Butler, and she's going to do a show that you're going to love. It's on sexual variations of organisms.
Very good. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to this program. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.